The Casebook of Sherlock Holmes. Foreword by Stephen Fry. And so we come to the final collection of Sherlock Holmes adventures to be given the world by their creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. When, in 1927, he placed the full stop at the end of the concluding sentence of the last mystery, The Adventure of Shoscombe Old Place, Conan Doyle was finishing his 56th short story in the Sherlock Holmes canon, to which he had also contributed 4 full-length novels, and so ended one of the most popular series involving perhaps the most memorable, instantly recognisable fictional characters ever presented to a devotedly enthusiastic reading public. To take the collection first, there are 12 tales here in all, 2 of them standing out by having as their narrator not the usual faithful chronicler Dr. Watson, but Sherlock Holmes himself. The first in this collection, The Adventure of the Mazarin Stone, like the title story of His Last Bow, is not told by either, but is written in a dispassionate third person. It also takes place in just one room. Both these peculiarities betray its origin as a stage play, which was called The Crown Diamond. Otherwise, in the casebook, there is presented the usual collection of varied problems for the great detective to solve. Some of you might notice variations on favourite themes. What is the tale The Three Garidebs, but a kind of reworking of the Red-Headed League? And surely the retired colour man reminds us of an even more malignant Norwood builder. We have met the owners of great racehorses before, and mysterious lodgers with a dark history. The apparently supernatural phenomena that bear a more rational causation, these we have encountered before also. Merciless blackmailers, clients of such importance that their names are withheld, strange discoloured faces at the window, and incomprehensible phrases gasped out by dying men, these are all familiar tropes. But we do not feel cheated or sold short to hear these new tunes played on old instruments. A great part of the pleasure of Holmes and Watson comes from the comfort of familiarity. To readers then, as to readers now, living in a world of breakneck speed, seemingly bent on self-destruction, the reliable Victorian certainty of Holmes's pipe, deerstalker, lens and dressing gown was and is just what is wanted. It is strange, almost alarming, to recall that this collection came out in the jazz age, the age of cigarette-smoking flappers, cocktails, art deco and sports cars. Wisely, Conan Doyle keeps Holmes and Watson where they belong, in the gaslit London of the previous century. The great author was approaching the end of his 60s at this point. He was a widely respected figure, quite as celebrated as grand contemporaries like Kipling and Shaw, though as a popular writer, he was, of course, never in the running for the Nobel Prize they each secured. He was a Knight of the Realm, though, doubly so, in fact, dubbed a Knight Bachelor in 1902 and created a Knight of Grace of the Most Venerable Order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem the following year. In that concluding sentence of this collection, he closed the book on Holmes and perhaps on his own writing life with a farewell to a career which has now outlived its shadows and promises to end in an honoured old age. Doyle was, in fact, only to live another 3 years before succumbing to a heart attack at the age of 71, while Holmes turned out to be immortal. There is a statue to Doyle in his native Edinburgh, as well as another in Crowborough, East Sussex, where he and his wife Jean lived out their later years. But Holmes seemed only just to be getting going. The Sherlock industry shows no sign of slowing to this day. On the contrary, it seems each year to be gathering fresh pace and new popularity. I don't suppose the number of Holmes' artifacts, statues, portraits, portrayals, adaptations, merchandise and spin-offs around the world could be counted. Just a silhouette of that hawk-like profile with deerstalker and sinuous pipe is all that is ever needed to say Sherlock Holmes. How many other fictional characters from books could be so quickly recreated with just a few swiftly drawn lines or suggested with such clarity by so few props and appurtenances? Perhaps only Harry Potter with his lightning scar, broomstick and round spectacles might also be so instantly identified by almost anyone on the planet. When Doyle died, the actor William Gillette was already a household name for personating Holmes on the stage. The young Noel Coward got his first professional role as Billy the Page Boy. The Samuelson Company, still in the movie business today into the third generation, had produced the first ever feature film adaptation of Holmes, a version of A Study in Scarlet, in 1914. It even used locations, the Cheddar Gorge in Somerset, standing in for the Rockies, and Southport Sands near Liverpool, making do as the plains of Utah. Shorter versions had been made of Holmes' stories, but this was the first feature-length presentation. It is worth quoting a contemporary review in the Kinematograph Monthly Film Review of November 1914. "It is a truism to say that Sherlock Holmes is always welcome on the screen. The few film adaptations to be seen of Conan Doyle's great series are, we believe, immensely popular with all classes of people, and there are certainly a great number yet of those famous detective adventures which might be turned into pictures with advantage. Personally, we do not think that either the legitimate drama or the picture drama can recapture for us the first fine, careless rapture we felt when we came upon these stories in their original version. But we are firmly of the opinion that in visualizing what is at its finest a purely literary pleasure, viz. A high-class detective yarn, the screen has hitherto proved itself a superior medium to the stage." Scores and scores of films were to follow in Doyle's lifetime alone. The entire canon and more was recorded as dramas for radio by the BBC in the 1990s and the first decade of the 21st century. Holmes has been bent and twisted into every genre imaginable and unimaginable: graphic novels, manga, science fiction, time travel, erotica, literary novels, animation, horror stories, comic books, gaming, and more. Junior Sherlocks, animal Sherlocks, spoofs called Sheer Luck and Schlock. You think it up and you'll find it's been done before. There is no indignity that has not been heaped upon the sage and super sleuth of Baker Street. Yet he survives. He more than survives. He rises up higher and higher with each passing decade, untarnished and unequalled. Because, I suppose, we need him more and more. A figure of authority that is benign, rational, soothing, omniscient, capable, and insightful, in a world and in daily lives so patently devoid of almost all those marvellous qualities, how welcome that is, and how grateful we are for its presence in our lives. So grateful that we won't really accept that Sherlock Holmes could ever be classed as make-believe. Between fact and fiction is a space where legend dwells. It is where Holmes and Watson will always live. I hope you have enjoyed these original stories from the pen of the great originator, Arthur Conan Doyle, and that your time in Sherlock Holmes's company and the company of the dogged and loyal Dr. Watson and all the other characters in their world of mists and mystery has given you pleasure. For me to be able to read you these stories has certainly been an absolute and unalloyed joy and privilege. So, here we are, for the last time, looking in on the first floor rooms of 221B Baker Street, London. Dr. Watson is looking in on his old friend even now. Let us see what they might be up to.